The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we slide into a Thursday. Gary, I guess we have to do this.
Oh, no, I'm not doing good.
No, you're not?
No, because...
I don't care how you're doing.
No, because we already know. Because before I come on the air, I mean, the last minute, you're throwing all these new stories at me.
No, this is why.
This is going on and
that's
going on.
It doesn't matter how we're doing. It doesn't matter anymore. The world has gone flat out crazy. Remember when I said it's, the liberals sounded like a thousand screaming kids, all screaming at once inside a gymnasium?
Yes.
I'm going to replace liberals with liberal media. That's what this week has been. And really, so many falsehoods being put out by the liberal media. Just flat-out lies.
Oh, you were just telling me just before we went on the air. I mean, just seconds before we cracked open the microphone.
Yahoo News did a story based on the American Bar Association. The story they did, they published it on Tuesday and ignored the fact that the American Bar Association on Friday came out and said, look, the president of the American Bar Association, who said Thursday evening, that they should delay the confirmation proceedings for Kavanaugh. That letter from the chairman of the committee that gets together to essentially go over it and decide and vet. They go through a process themselves of essentially vetting and deciding if they're going to support the nominee or not. But that process is done behind closed doors, and the president of the ABA did not put that in front of them, did not send that to the committee. So the chairman of that committee on Friday wrote a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee and said he doesn't speak for the committee. So
and they're still using that in a story.
And Yahoo News is still using this in the story they did Tuesday. The correction letter from the committee chairman came out on Friday. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the truth is anymore. And I was telling you that same news organization,
Yahoo,
on Wednesday,
I saw that
mid-morning, put out a story and totally tried. They're going after. We knew this was coming, that Lindsey Graham would be a target now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's built so much momentum on the right during and after the hearing last week with Kavanaugh. Well, they go after him full bore. And they quoted him on something saying that it was essentially a quote in defense of the president at the rally talking about Dr. Ford. Nope, he was referring to Bill Clinton. And Molly Hemingway on Twitter, I think, single-handedly forced them to make the correction.
Well, I mean, I saw the tweet too. She says, liars.
She was livid. I mean, you could tell she was livid.
I know.
And rightly so. This is not journalism anymore. It's activism.
Just so you know, Yahoo News on Wednesday paraphrased a quote by Senator Lindsey Graham in a way that made him appear like he made a sexist remark about one of the women who accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct.
Right.
In an interview with The Atlantic, or at The Atlantic Festival, Graham defended President Donald Trump's recent criticism of Dr. Ford. He said everything he said was factual. He's frustrated his nominee has been treated so badly, Graham said. Factual. It was a personal degrading attack on someone who was a private citizen, responded interviewer Jeffrey Goldberg, chief editor of The Atlantic. Graham pushed back. You know what's degrading. This is what happens when you go through quote. This is what happens when you go through a trailer park with a $100 bill. The audience gasped at the quote, leading Goldberg to clarify that Graham was reciting a famous line said by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Graham's quote was actually a reference to a comment made by James Carville, mm-hmm. an advisor to former President Bill Clinton, about Paula Jones,
right,
who accused Clinton of sexually harassing her in 1991. If you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, you'll never know what you'll find. Carville said of Jones after she went public with the accusation. Graham joked with the audience, most of you are too young to remember this. When Yahoo News posted the video of the exchange on Twitter, however, it paraphrased Graham's quote as, everything he said was factual. This is what you get when you go through a trailer park with a $100 bill, giving the impression that Graham was referring to Dr. Ford.
Right.
So liberals and journalists on Twitter also spread tweets giving the false impression that the trailer park quote was from Graham. Only some deleted their tweets and apologized. And then they go through the entire thing. And finally, Yahoo did come out and say that they had deleted the tweet, correct?
Right. But they didn't correct in the tweet. They didn't correct.
No.
To say why they deleted it or why it was incorrect. And here's the I guess if you call it a correction, but a tweet that came later after they deleted it. We deleted a tweet that did not accurately reflect the context of Lindsey Graham's quote in the below video clip. And that's all they put.
I bet you that a month from now, I'll hear that we will get, depending on, you know, what happens with the Kavanaugh thing, but I bet you we will get emails and different communications from people on the left that will say, yeah, but Lindsey Graham said this. Because once it's out there and spreads on social media, it doesn't matter whether there is a correction in the story,
which actually
is not a correction.
There's not a correction. They just posted the video again and said, we deleted a tweet that wasn't accurate. Well, exactly how was it not accurate? Explain that. Well, they can't bring themselves to defend Lindsey Graham. That's the problem.
Coming up on the show today, by the way, the breaking news here in the last about hour and 20 minutes, report from the White House, the background check on Kavanaugh, which the Senate will see tomorrow. No corroboration of sexual misconduct allegations.
Yeah.
According to the report from the sourced report, by the way. By the way, somebody wrote me the other day and it was really great. They said, what do you mean when you say sourced report? And that's a legit question. I'm glad that they...
Not an official statement from, you know, who, whatever group or entity.
It's not an official. Right, it's not a person. And I explained to them, it's a source to say. And it means nobody will go on the record and tell you what it is. So they use the source of it. That's what a source story is, where you don't have a name. You just simply say sources and the White House say. The report, again, Wall Street Journal had it, is where I saw it first. That the background check on Kavanaugh, no corroboration of sexual misconduct allegations. Is the cloture vote still set for Friday?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's set for Friday. They could have some reports saying a broad vote could come as soon as Saturday. But I think at least a couple of organizations were reporting that it's more likely that it would have either late Saturday or Sunday. They could actually do a vote on Sunday. I'm guessing they're going to want to get this done as soon as possible. So I would look, if I were Chuck Todd, I would not miss work on Saturday. So the entire, I think this entire thing, it's interesting because if the confirmation happens, the cloture vote on Friday will tell them essentially the head count. Will tell them if they've got the 50, and with 50, the vice president could be the 51 to break the tie. If they've got 50 on Friday, they're not going to wait a moment. I think if they get to that 50 or plus, I think they're going to do that vote on Saturday. So we'll see if that happens. But if you've got the head count, you don't wait for another elevator door to open.
Shut down the elevators.
Shut down the elevators. Everybody walk the stairs. Speaking of which, they have ramped up security on Capitol Hill greatly over the last few days. As you can possibly imagine, right now the protesters are very active, which there's in and of itself, that's not a problem. Peaceful protests, hey, I encourage that, whatever it is. You may be wrong, but that's your right to go out and peacefully protest. As long as you're not trespassing and you're, you know, legally in that place, then it's okay for you to carry a picket sign. But that's not the concern. The concern is that people are talking, and there's a lot of chatter on social media, you know, about, again, the whole get-in-your-face, or as they call it, going direct approach, and you can't have that. If you want to have a group, if you want to go out and protest, if you want to have a voice, no problem. But running up to senators in a hallway right now is likely not going to be tolerated by Capitol Hill security.
I was telling you in our pre-show meeting about ICE, that apparently it's the union, the ICE union, is asking the mayor of Portland, Oregon, to give up control of the city's police department. Sent letters Wednesday morning requesting federal and state investigations over his handling of the Occupy ICE protests this summer. You remember they lasted for weeks, forced the ICE office in the city to shut down. The National ICE Council, the union that represents ICE officers, says the mayor fueled the confrontations by expressing support for the protesters and, in public and private statements, made clear to police that they were to stand down, ignoring some 911 calls from agency employees being menaced by protesters. The ICE Council told Attorney General Jeff Sessions that Mr. Wheeler's directives violated those employees' civil rights, leaving them without protections he is required to provide in a separate letter to the Oregon Attorney General. The ICE Council attorney said the mayor broke state laws against official misconduct by telling police to ignore ongoing crimes among the protesters. So, I mean, that's to the point where it's getting, you know, right now.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh, you know, that the belief, as ICE believes, and they're going to have to, you know, of course, make their point solid. I mean, they're asking the mayor to do it. We'll see, you know, where this whole thing goes. But that's what they believe is happening, that now you've got politicians stating, well, look, if you disagree with me on a particular issue, well, then we're not going to protect you. We're going to remove the police. We're going to tell the police to stand down. We're going to tell them, no, you protect those protesters. You don't protect these protesters. You're going to protect those protesters and those people that are actually committing crimes against other government entities and are in intimidating and assaulting people, trespassing, doing the wrong thing, and we're going to tell them to stand down.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to tell them not to do their job. You ask where it's going, that's where it's going next.
Yes.
So we'll get to that and more, plus your calls and comments. Got a great show ahead. What is coming up next? We just told you the cloture vote is supposed to happen on Friday. We'll see what happens tomorrow. It's going to be a crazy day.
We're being told that that the Senate has the 302s and is going over them as we speak. Keep in mind, this is all behind closed doors. We won't see the 302s.
Well,
the reports.
Remember, I don't think anybody gets a copy.
No, they don't get an electronic copy. They get a paper copy only.
But they're not supposed, from what I read, the staff isn't supposed to see it. Only the members of.
Yes, only the Senate members. Yes.
Only the Senate members get a copy.
They're going over that right now, and the committee, also has it, but. Really, for the committee, it's not going to mean anything.
Well, the entire point is to make sure there's not a leak. But here's the question: if you don't leak it out, if you don't make it public, do you end up handing it another great opportunity for the Democrats to say you're hiding it all from the people? Whether the normal process is to keep it quiet. As we all know.
Well, I don't know what the rules are on the 302s, because that's an official form. And so, and I really don't know. Is there any kind of penalty for leaking something, any information that is directly from a 302?
That would be a good point.
Because if that is the case, then we'll never see it. And you're right. The Democrats can claim.
We'll use that.
I was just reading a story at RCP about, look, this could help Democrats or Republicans in November, either way that it goes. So, you know, if the Democrats get their win where there is no nomination or it's not no confirmation, then let's keep the momentum going And then the Republicans, of course, would, you know, with let's demonstrate or let's keep pushing the fact that this is how the left and the left media is going to behave in situations like this, which is why, you know, we need to maintain power.
Which means we'll look at all the polls for the elections, all the polls as to, you know, where the election excitement is and all that coming up, plus your calls and comments. We've got a lot to talk about today. If you'd like to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So the report there from the White House at the background check on Kavanaugh, they've gone through it, and they say no corroboration of sexual misconduct allegations. Now we'll go to the Senate. In fact, the Senate, from what we know, has it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see what happens tomorrow, what the response is from Democrats, I'm sure. And who knows? It may start overnight.
Yeah,
may start seeing tweets overnight.
Right.
Whatever, we'll keep you up to date on that. What's next? We'll tell you what McConnell said yesterday. We'll tell you about the former Democrat intern arrested for posting personal information of at least one Republican senator online. Breaking news on the Russia Democrat collusion front. top FBI lawyer offered explosive testimony on the abnormal handling of the Russian probe. This story came out yesterday. Was sort of, I mean, Fox News, Catherine Herridge was on it, but really wasn't covered much of anywhere else. So we'll get to that. Now some Amazon employees are complaining, saying that after their pay raise, they will still make less because bonuses and stock options were taken away.
Oh, okay.
The latest election polls out there will tell you about a story from a conservative newspaper that says the GOP believes they will lose the House because of so much more money being spent by Democrats on those races.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really interesting article. And you and I said we don't make predictions. Look, if you look at past history, the Republicans should lose House members.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. I mean, it's almost a guarantee.
Right.
Just like when somebody asked us back in 2016, oh, you're going to be surprised Trump's going to win. I said, well, actually, we won't be because history shows us that when you had this long of a down economy, the opposition party usually wins. And that's what happens. What's going to happen here? I don't know. We'll tell you about, you know, you saw the NPR poll that showed the it's evening up now.
Right.
As to, you know, for the House. So who knows? We'll throw everything by you and we'll report and
you decide. I'm not sure we can legally say that.
Somebody already has that, don't they? Yeah,
for Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
As we predicted, those showers for today in the desert southwest have trekked northward. We'll see most of the precip now beyond the state of Arizona and into the states of Nevada and Utah. Salt Lake City set to receive heavy showers today. Up and down I-15, up to I-84 near Twin Falls, we'll continue to see showers from that system known as Rosa. North of those showers, we'll pick up some snow and mixed precip for central Idaho over through central Wyoming. Boise, Idaho has a 70% chance of showers today, but for Bismarck, North Dakota, we're going to pick up a wintry mix and possibly some accumulation. Look for heavy showers on the Kansas-Missouri border today. Light showers extending up through Illinois, Indiana, and northern Ohio. Thunderstorms and the potential for severe weather from Cleveland to Buffalo on I-90. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
For those not on Ambien, there is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So, a couple of stories here. This from NPR. Mm-hmm. Amid Kavanaugh confirmation battle, Democratic enthusiasm edge evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
Just over a month away from, I'm reading this directly from NPR, from the critical elections across the country, the wide Democratic enthusiasm advantage that has defined 2018 campaign at this point has disappeared, according to a new NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll. Hmm. In July, there was a 10-point gap between the number of Democrats and Republicans saying the November election were very important. Now that's down to 2 points, a statistical tie. Democrats' advantage on which party's candidates are more likely to support has been cut in half since the last month. The results come amid the pitched and hotly partisan confirmation battle over Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. All right, so that's one story there.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about, you know, the way the enthusiasm gap. You and I have stated, and it's all, again, anecdotal for us, but, well, not really in a way. I mean, I can't tell you how it might change an election, but it's not anecdotal because we sit here every day. But the last 2 weeks has been the most intense topic, the most intense time. I know on this show, I can't speak for any other talk show host,
right?
Because I'm not sitting in their studio every day and experience what they experience. All I know is for us, on hundreds of stations across America,
mm-hmm.
there has not been anything close to the passion, the unity of the Republicans. I can't remember anything that matches this.
No. You know, lifetime, I can't.
Because, look, the passion was there in 2016, but it wasn't unified.
No, it wasn't unified.
From the Republicans.
And it wasn't, it was a different type of motivation, I guess I should say. Even the Tea Party, if you go back to the early part of the momentum for the modern-day Tea Party, in 2009, you know, around tax day in 2009 and then into the summer when the rally started happening and everything else, I still, even at its height, I still can't say that it was this kind of one-directional motivating passion. Because there were a number of things being worked out in the Tea Party along the way. And then, it, you know, you had some Tea Party candidates and everything else. But at its height, at its peak, I can't say for certain that it was this kind of motivation across the board. I think it was big, but this is different because of the culture that's being created by the left and the media on the left. This is different than an objection to high taxes and things that are very real. Here, this is a pattern of behavior by the left that's being very clearly demonstrated over and over again.
And I remember other, you know, intense times that were based on a particular issue. For example, after the 2016 election. When W was talking about, you know, the bridge loan,
mm-hmm.
And you had, and even before that,
right?
Before the election, you had the passion when they talked about a bailout, and right. You know, and McCain, but that wasn't unification. There were people. There was an intensity there that existed. McCain-Feingold, you and I were working together, or yeah. Not McCain-Feingold, McCain-Kennedy,
right? Right.
The immigration bill,
mm-hmm.
That's when they, you know, blew the phones out at Capitol Hill. You remember that
right,
one?
Right, right.
But that was on a specific topic.
Yeah.
Tarp,
same thing.
Tarp, right. That's what
yeah.
I meant. Tarp,
short,
tarp,
short-lived,
right.
Yeah.
Short-lived. This is different because it is about Kavanaugh,
mm-hmm.
but it isn't just about Kavanaugh.
Right.
This isn't really about Trump. And reading right here, it says, look right here, the Wall Street Journal. Interesting that they write this the same day that, you know, the same week that, you know, you and I are having the same thought going, wow. It goes, the never conservatives, the Kavanaugh fight isn't about Trump. We're all deplorables now. And he says, you know, look, you know, talks about the Kavanaugh isn't
yeah.
part of, you know, isn't part of the whole Trumpism thing.
Right.
He's separate from that completely. And we've talked about how many never Trumpers, we mentioned this last week, how boom, I said, whoa, wow, all of a sudden they are absolutely in supportive of Kavanaugh and furious. And I even talked about the never Trumpers that I know that had built alliances with Democrats because of their hatred towards Trump.
Yeah.
And now they're fighting with each other. Because when it comes down to it, well, except maybe for Bill Kristol.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The one holdout.
except for Bill Kristol.
And I haven't seen anything from George Will.
And it's like, you know, yeah, exactly. So, you know, they're not part of the Trumpism. He's not some, they write, he's not some Steve Bannon insurgent.
Mm.
The judge is the epitome of the GOP legal establishment, a Supreme Court nominee from central casting. And you know, and it's a great point. Spent 26 years in public service, and the hope and that's why it's not about him. What I think it is, and I think it's bigger than just Kavanaugh. I think it's the realization from a lot of people that don't like Trump,
yeah,
and don't like where the Republican Party is going, where they've realized. We got to come home for a while because those people are insane. I know Ocasio-Cortez yesterday said the right is insane. We'll go through whether she actually had any substance to that. But when we've talked about the many things out there, when you see what the left is doing to Kavanaugh, when you see the presumption of innocence is gone, when an allegation itself is enough to destroy someone's life, this goes beyond a political issue. It goes to what won Trump the election. It is the culture war, but it's also and I say a culture war because it's a war on it's about fairness. It's about the belief in the Constitution. Look, you know, we were never Trumpers. We've criticized Trump, but we were never on that. Never, I'm never going to vote for him. We voted for him.
Mm-hmm.
You and I don't practice political idolatry. We don't worship anybody. You're not going to see us at rallies going, rah, 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 whatever my candidate does. We will tell you who is the best, you know, who has the best idea on what particular issue and why. And we end up voting for the person who most reflects what we believe. Not everything that we believe, because that would be impossible. As adults,
well, see, that would only
know
be
that.
Me.
Right? Exactly. We'd all only vote for Eric.
Like
that would be it.
Rick Perry in one of his first interviews after dropping out of the election in 2016. You know, well, you know, I guess he wasn't your first choice. And he told the interviewer, "Well, no, my first choice was me."
and so I think when you see that. You know, it's been brought back to many of these never Trumpers going, oh, and many of them who started making alliances with people on the left,
yeah,
you know, trying to build these emotional, as I saw on social media from some of the people that I know that are never Trumpers, that all of a sudden the brakes have been put on going, whoa, you'd really do this?
Yeah.
I mean, you really do. This is what you really we. Wow. What, you know, we thought, you know, this is almost like the McCain funeral. What we thought that there were actually people out there on the Democrat side that all wanted to come together to find the common ground that we have. And now the realization is, no, they don't.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people, this is a wake up call. Look, the party isn't perfect.
Yeah.
If you listen to the show, you know, when we talk about the Republican Party, listen to the podcast from yesterday's show.
Yeah, right.
But the party isn't perfect. But again, everything's, when you get to this point of the actual election, it's a binary choice. Mm-hmm. It's a choice between this group and that group. Neither are perfect, so what do? You look for the best one. And I think that's what a lot of never-Trumpers are looking at right now, saying, whoa. No, who, you know, who was it? I'm trying to think of the person. Oh, yeah. It was Glenn Beck who said he couldn't vote for Trump. He'd rather vote for Hillary.
Right.
Yeah. That was it. I saw it this week because I saw that Shapiro interviewed him, or he interviewed Shapiro or something like that. And I saw it on social media, and there are a lot of people furious saying, excuse me, he said don't vote for Trump, vote for Hillary. And that kind of, you know, that kind of thought process doesn't exist right now. Well, except for Bill Kristol.
Is it Hoenig or Hoenig there at, he's on Fox News on the money block, and I think Fox Business News as well. He was one of those otherwise conservatives that came out with the I'm with her. Remember that?
Yes.
Hashtag I'm with her. Yeah. By the way, that was after the House report, the House GOP report, the 800-page report on Benghazi.
Yeah, so I think that's, you know, what's happening. So, again, you look at that and you say, wow, it really looks good for Republicans. Then I see this, Washington Examiner, which is, for anybody who doesn't know, a very conservative outlet. GOP gloom. Republicans predict House majority will be swept away by Democratic spending tsunami. 5 weeks before the critical midterm elections, House Republicans are outgunned and outmanned as a constellation of well-sourced Democratic groups dedicated to winning the majority overwhelm GOP defenses. From financially flush super PACs flooding the zone with advertising to grassroots organizations directing money and volunteers to targeted areas, around a dozen political groups are fueling the Democratic Party to flip 23 seats and capture the House on November 6th. In a toxic environment driven by discontent with President Donald Trump, the barrage has become too much to handle for the two groups manning the barricades for House Republicans, the National Republican Congressional Committee, their official campaign arm, and Congressional Leadership Fund, their designated super PACs. Our guys are taking a beating, said Rob Sims, a Republican consultant. And former NRCC executive director, said Tuesday in an interview with the Washington Examiner. And so, you go through this whole article, and they go through it specifically, you know, the money that's being spent by the Democrats and the vulnerabilities. We're there to the point, and these are the people, the money people behind it, saying we're going to be swept by the Democrats.
Yeah.
So which one is true?
Well, and there's what you have.
That's why you have the election.
Right, exactly.
Election day.
And remember, Ocasio-Cortez, her opponent, spent, I think it was somewhere around $3 million, and she spent nothing.
Yeah, money doesn't always win you the election.
No, it is the message. It is also the motivating factors that we've talked about, and clearly Kavanaugh, one way or the other. I mean, I would agree with the piece to a certain extent. Written at RCP, and I'll get the author here in a minute. They deserve the credit. But the idea that, you know, it's theoretically, it could benefit either side, you know, to a certain extent. Again, but typically, what do you see historically? There's been the younger demos turned out for the primaries this year. They don't always turn out necessarily in November for a midterm. So we'll see if that actually changes this year, because, again, what could motivate them? And a number of things could happen between, let's just say, Kavanaugh's confirmed on Saturday or Sunday, and he's on the bench on Monday. Everything's going to change, and there will be something else for people to talk about, bash Trump about, or whatever it is, and that's the difference. We'll see what happens.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the top of the hour, we want to get to your calls and comments now that the Wall Street Journal and others breaking the story that the White House has looked at the new background check information from the FBI and say that there's no corroboration of the Judge Kavanaugh doing anything regarding any type of sexual allegations that have been thrown at him. It now goes to the Senate. From what we know, the Senate is getting a hold of it. The members of the Senate are getting a hold of the information. Cloture vote has been set right now for Friday on Judge Kavanaugh, which means as early as Saturday there could be a vote. Also, the story came out late yesterday that the top FBI lawyer, James Baker, gave explosive testimony on the abnormal handling of the Russia probe. TheHill.com broke out and said exactly what it is, which shows, politics in the investigation. What does that mean? We'll tell you coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Coming up this hour, we will tell you about the explosive testimony given by a top FBI lawyer to the House yesterday. And this is like, whoa. I mean, this is really some interesting stuff, which shows you and this is what the Republicans have always stated, that the getting the FISA warrant was all about politics. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. But we have found out the process here by how the Senate Judiciary Committee will be able to get a look at the actual background check that the FBI has done and the actual report. Eric, you've been doing some research here during the break on that.
Yeah, so there was, back in 2009, by the way, the Democrats controlled the Senate and the House then, a memorandum of understanding, essentially, which is a rule in the Senate that was created to keep the background check for nominees secret, okay? And under that rule, the procedure is that there is one copy, a paper copy, not an electronic. There's not the 302 report from the FBI on Kavanaugh is not going to be sent via email. You can't take pictures of it. And you can make notes if you're a senator looking at it, but your notes will be secured in the same way that the forms will be, and those forms are highly secured. So this is how it's going down. This is the procedure. There's one copy of it. That one copy is going to go into a room with the senators. The GOP will have an hour with it. The Democrats have an hour with it. We were told it was being widely reported that they were looking over that late Wednesday evening. The report from The Hill earlier in the day, Thursday afternoon into Thursday evening, was that they would review it on Thursday, but the reports came out that they, you know, it was the senators had it, and I assume were reviewing it and taking that time to review it. At least the GOP might have been as late as Wednesday evening, so that could pour over into Thursday. Now, there's been some concern there, and of course, protest by Dick Durbin, right, Democrat whip. He has been, you know, of course, vocal through this whole thing, but that's who Dick Durbin is. He's, you know, freaking out that they only get 1 hour. They only get one hour. If you look at the number of senators, and they only get 30 minutes each, then that's going to be a problem. That would take, of course, 50 hours in total. Well, this is, again, typical that you would want to, you're trying to keep it secured. So you basically go in, you know, the left goes in, the Democrats go in as a team, the Republicans go in as a team. Again, the rules prohibit them from taking pictures. They can make notes, but those notes will be secured and possibly destroyed, actually. You can make those notes along the way so that you can go over those with your colleagues as you're reviewing the document. Now, Corker has asked that a copy be made for each senator, so each senator can spend an hour with it themselves and they can go over it, so maybe one senator is able to find something that someone else didn't find. No word yet as to whether the Senate Majority Leader has wanted to or decided to or is moving to or considering even changing that and making multiple copies. I'm guessing the way McConnell has been talking, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, over the past few days, he's not going to budge on this rule because he knows the more copies that are out there, the greater the likelihood that this whole thing is going to be leaked to the media. Now, it could be leaked to the media anyway. Again, but sharing details from this
would be a crime.
It would be punishable under Senate rules. So I don't know.
I don't know
what the punishment includes.
Okay,
it is. You,
right.
It is against the rule.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean crime.
Yeah. Against the rule, not necessarily yes. against the law.
Right.
But those rules are very strict. And keep in mind, that memo that in 2009 helped establish all of this and put this in place. That was created by the Democrats. So that I don't know what the rule vote was, and if Republicans also agreed with that. But the point is that they had power. They were a majority in the Senate and the House in 2009, and that's when the rule was created. So you take from that basically, and it could be that the majority leader comes in and says, okay, we'll give you guys 3 hours as a team, and we'll take 3 hours. That could be the case. Because if it's Thursday, that's really the only, I guess, procedure. Not that the Senate doesn't have other things to do, but on this issue, it's the only item on their plate because the cloture vote is not going to happen until Friday. And then, you know, the wide vote over the weekend sometime, they think. But so that's, I don't know that we're going to, he may change, he may allow more time. He can do that, but in allowing more time, that doesn't mean he's going to make more copies.
It's important to note that none of the staff is allowed in, only the senators themselves.
Right.
No staff. And look, I still believe it's going to be leaked. And I believe that, and it may not be in the best interest if, you know, what we saw from the Wall Street Journal earlier, that the sources tell them that the White House has said, you know, they've looked at the background check and there's nothing there. Just like before, there's no cooperation, you know, whatsoever. And therefore, it's the same as it was last week at this time after the FBI did it, which means if that's accurate that we get from the Wall Street Journal, that means on Ramirez there's nothing,
right?
Because remember they talked to Ramirez also because she had not yet had she didn't have testimony before Congress, so that came out earlier this week that she had been talked to and been contacted by the FBI. So if we hear that there's no cooperation, that would, I guess, it would also mean no cooperation from Ramirez unless the sources talking to the Wall Street Journal were just referring to Ford.
Right.
And I'm saying that because I don't know. I'm not making any assumptions on this. But I just have a feeling that Democrats are going to come out and they're going to leak part of it, that or they're going to say things that put the pressure on the Republicans to change this rule or forget about this rule in this particular case. Because I don't think, look, if there is no cooperation, Democrats don't want them to release it. I think they'd rather have the Republicans say, no, this is a rule that the Democrats came up with.
Yeah.
And we are bound to stick with it for this, this nominee and other nominees as we've done across the board. And then the Democrats will use it against them because it's the only thing that they've got. If that's the case, they have nothing else except to use innuendo and force the Republicans then to break the rules of a background check and release all of it. I just have a feeling that's what's going on because you are going to have. I mean, I who knows what the Democrats have up their sleeves now? I mean, nothing really has stuck this week. We're to Thursday now. Nothing else really has stuck that has come out. Nothing.
Right.
So it's Ford, and that's it. There's nothing else out there.
Right.
And so we've got today, and then Friday is a cloture vote. Mm-hmm. And so the Democrats are, I guarantee, they are scrambling. They're up right now listening. They're listening to us on WMAL right now. Because they're up trying to come up with another way to delay this. And they will look for any way to delay it. And so I just don't see, again, I would be surprised if the Democrats said nothing about it. I would be very surprised. I have a feeling that you're going to have leaks, or they're going to give their opinion, maybe not to the point of a leak, but to say there's evidence in there that shows that, you know, there is cooperation and the Republicans are just wrong, which means you're going to have to release it.
Yeah.
Because remember, cooperation is the fact that she said that she told other people,
mm-hmm.
and she told her therapist.
Mm-hmm.
That's their cooperation, but they won't get specific on it. Well, that's not corroboration that the crime actually happened. That's not a witness stating, no, these people were here. That's just corroboration that she, at one point, talked to somebody about an incident that happened.
Yes.
But they won't be specific on it, which will force the Democrat or the Republicans, I think, probably to release it.
Hmm. Yeah.
So there's where we stand right now. But it's important to know. What they actually do in this, and it's very important, and I'm so glad you brought it up, to let people know that it is the Democrat Senate that came up with this rule
mm-hmm.
in 2009.
Right.
It's their rule.
Right, and that rule being essentially this memorandum of understanding from 2009 that it really kind of added to the process. There was this understanding or a rule, another rule in place before the 2009 rule that talked about how they were going to proceed with the vetting and information found during the vetting process of any given nominee. But what the 2009 rule did, or memorandum of understanding, which is adding to the rule, it was securing it in the modern age, essentially, because you know, you've got your cell phone, your smartphone, you can take a picture, you can email, you mm-hmm. can create. Now you can, since 2009, you can do a lot more. They may have to update that memorandum again. But, I mean, you can create PDFs and actually copy. It's really more of a photo. Or scan documents with your phone. You know, I mean, it really, if you look at the procedure, it should be because the deal was, even though this one has been very, very, very public, the deal was is that it's up for the senators to decide ultimately, and there may be some things in the background checks that don't pertain at all. Let's just say, you know, something that happened in high school that somebody just claims without anything to back it up, you know? That doesn't relate at all to their experience as a judge. But the entire background check process has always been something that was, again, respected on both sides. Well, that changed. That likely changed long before Kavanaugh started to change. But if you had any doubts before this one, then those should all be put to sleep.
Well, I unfortunately think, since it's going to come out anyway, mm-hmm. I think that we should say our sources say that the spitwad controversy from seventh grade probably will be released.
Well, I mean, again, you look at it and someone making a claim. And the problem is that the claim, they can't find anything to back it up. The left screams for an FBI investigation. Well, that wasn't going to happen, but a supplemental background check. The president agreed to that. You know, I was watching Sarah Huckabee Sanders, part of the press conference on Wednesday. You know, and they were wanting her to basically say the president was wrong for mocking, you know, Dr. Ford. But then one of the last questions, actually, I think it was the last question, from a female reporter. Well, why is it that the president came out and spoke against the abuse in the Catholic Church, and those who were claiming that they were abused were men, but yet he won't defend any women? I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty damn close. That was the question. And she said, Sarah Huckabee Sanders answers, well, wait a minute. He's the one who actually ordered the supplemental background check. He's been more than accommodating in this entire process. So his comments at the rally were factual based, but he believes that there's nothing to back up the claims. You know why? Because there's nothing to back up the claims. The left, once again, has created their own little fantasy that these are credible claims. But sorry, in this setting, they're not, if you can't find anyone to back it up.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Looking to purchase your own truck or trailer? Agile Financial Company may be able to help with financing. Eric Gifford with Agile tells us about the company and the process of getting approved.
We started back in 2004. 2008, we opened our first brick-and-mortar office, and we've been serving truckers through today with an A-plus business rating from the BBB. But we don't go by a credit score. We actually look at their credit profile, experience in the industry, stability factors. So we treat them as a person, not a score. We look for the way to get them approved and into their own truck, especially the guys just starting out and getting into their first truck. Commercial trucks, the medium duty to the class 8 trucks, all type trailers of all types as well. Just not brand new equipment. We specialize in just the used equipment. Generally an approval within 24 to 48 hours. After that, depending on how fast the customer wants to move, they can be in their new truck in 3 to 7 days total. Go to Agile, A-G-I-L-E, truck. truck.com. Get an application, print it out there. They sign it, fill it out completely, send it in to us along with the truck or trailer information that they're interested in, and we take off working for them from that point.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So there's where we are, cloture vote on Friday. The Senate, all members of the Senate will be able to see it over the next couple of days.
There was a statement. You and I were looking for an update to this story just a little while ago, and we did that during this past break, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying that all senators will have an opportunity to review the report over the next couple of days.
Right, as we know.
So,
right.
And, you know, because the cloture vote could happen, you know, late Friday. So they could take all day Thursday and all day Friday. And I suspected that, well, while he may not allow multiple copies to be made, again, there's only one single copy, that he could easily say, well, okay, over the next couple of days, we'll take our time with it, and it won't be the 1 hour restriction. Each of them can go into that room, either as a group or individually, and they can, you know, take their time with it. And they likely will do that, but I'm guessing they will do that either in one large group or smaller groups even, in order to see everything.
We had seen the story late yesterday that the top FBI lawyer, James Baker, offers explosive testimony on abnormal handling of the Russia probe into the Trump campaign. And that's a Fox News headline from yesterday. Was going through additional materials here in the last hour and saw thehill.com and John Solomon, who I believe was with, was it Circa?
Yeah, Circa News. Right?
Yeah, when they released the... Mm-hmm. They were the ones that did
Sarah
the story.
Carter, right?
Sarah A. Carter, right? Mm-hmm. I believe it was both of them that did the story on the FISA courts rebuking the Obama administration. This goes back to way back May of 2017. Well, his story goes to the specifics of it and the specific of the allegation. We'll get into the details of it, but here it is, the first line. Congressional investigators have confirmed that a top FBI official met with Democratic Party lawyers, that's Perkins Coie, to talk about allegations of Donald Trump and the Russia collusion weeks before the 2016 election and just before the Bureau secured a search warrant targeting Trump's campaign.
So that would have been late September or early October, at the latest, in 2016?
Yep.
Wow.
Former FBI General Counsel James Baker met during the 2016 with at least one attorney from Perkins Coie, the Democratic National Committee's private law firm, which is the organization that paid Fusion GPS to hire the former British spy to get the stuff from the Russians.
A show for everyone, including those living in a delusional world. Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal, TeamRunSmart.com, a community of 55,000-plus and growing every day. Of industry experts, drivers just like you, and the Team Run Smart pros that are out there hauling freight just like you every day, and they're blogging from the road. They've got a lot of really cool blogs and videos up there at TeamRunSmart.com by Freightliner.
All right, so the report is out of the White House that the FBI background check is done, the supplemental background check, which makes seven background checks in the history of Brett Kavanaugh, and nothing is corroborated, any of the allegations. And this would be Ford and apparently, I'm guessing, Ramirez, too, because they talked to Ramirez. But all we know is that the at least we know, without question, with Ford, because that was the main focus of it. But we also know the FBI talked to Ramirez. And so I'm assuming then that they tried to find if there was any cooperation there. And as we pointed out earlier, now they all get to see the document. There's only it's a 302, as they call it. So it's a document that it will be just a piece of paper that the Democrats have to go into a room and look at. They can't bring any staff members in. They can take notes, but they cannot walk out with the notes.
Right.
And this was the protocol and rules and regulations that were set by the Democrat majority Congress back in 2009. Mm-hmm. They came up with the rule and had the majority to do this rule back in 2009, which is very important because you're going to hear cries from members of the Democrat Party that are now in the leadership position that were members of the Democrat Party back then and were a part of making the rules, who now want to chuck that rule aside. That would be called chucking the rule or protocol aside. That would be called the new Feinstein rule.
Yes. Interesting note of the way it is carried actually into the halls there in the Senate chamber. A wizard named Gandalf hands it to a hobbit named Frodo and says, keep it safe. And then Frodo carries it because it holds a great deal of power. And the power could be corrupting. Oh, I'm only halfway joking. And then later they're going to throw it into a fiery volcano. It's interesting to note because, you know, we talk about the Senate rule that prohibits them from leaking information to the media about this. Now, it would be content or details from the 302, and I don't have that rule in front of me, but let's assume that it's specific details, right? You wouldn't leak that. There's likely This is going to be the understatement of the century. It's likely we're going to see some in the Senate, I'll let you guess which side, that will live in that gray area of that rule and not necessarily, and you hit on this first a little while ago, a few minutes ago, but really, I mean, the approach would likely be, you know, because I could see a rule being enforced. It is breaking the rule, and it is punishable. I don't know what that punishment is, but certainly you don't, you've got to be careful, I guess, which way you go. Keep in mind, in the House, things may be working for Democrats, according to the polls, maybe right now. But in the Senate, there's a lot of close races, and there's no one talking about a blue wave in the Senate. So you have to assume that McConnell's still going to be in place in the new year. But the point being, a Democrat doesn't want to go out and blatantly violate that rule because they know internally that's going to create a lot of problems for them going forward. I'm not saying they won't do it, but there's a huge disincentive for them to do that. But you probably could see them saying, look, and it's going to be this. It's already this from the liberal media. NBC News on Wednesday. Well, there are dozens of people, I think they said over 40 people, that have said that have information, potentially they could be witnesses. That's one of the words they used, potentially, in their story, that could help substantiate all of these claims and blah, blah, blah. That's not how this works. They don't get to control that, but nonetheless, that will be the narrative, and you'll probably see a couple of senators during the day on Thursday and or Friday, more likely on Friday, as they try and hold elevated doors open. They're going to try and block this, saying this was not enough. We need a greater background check. They didn't interview enough people. They didn't talk to Ford or Kavanaugh.
There's new allegations, yep, that are coming out,
yeah,
that are uncorroborated too. So we need to investigate them, since there, right, is no corroboration. We need to find the corroboration. I mean, it's going to go down this rabbit hole forever. But I do believe that, because the Republicans most likely want to abide by the rule, that Democrats will do everything they can to claim, for example, as Adam Schiff has done all along. Mm. Adam Schiff, Adam Schiff, since we'll be talking about the whole Russian collusion investigation coming up in the bombshell out of D.C. Yesterday about James Baker, apparently telling the House, I don't know which panel it was, but in closed door testimony yesterday, telling them he talked to the Democratic National Committee's lawyers right before they got the warrant.
Right.
And James Baker, a top FBI official at that time, which without question shows that politics played a part, and he talked to them about what was going on. Mm-hmm. He talked to the DNC lawyers about the Trump-Russia collusion investigation that was going on, which is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
Right. Yeah.
You cannot, nobody can defend that in an investigation. So it's getting to where you and I asked questions over a year and a half ago, is this where this is going? And we, you know, the thing is, every question that we asked about what might have happened here, mm-hmm, and what they might be investigating, every single thing that we asked the question on has come true.
It has all come out in a series of reports. Well, you know, if you look at it, at least it's there has been people, the media has looked into those questions, I guess we could say, right? Well, first of all, one of the first questions, the big question really, was there are we looking at possibly a gross abuse of power under the previous administration, that a person or persons knowingly used false information to, which is, Giuliani pointed out, you know, there you have it, there's your perjury. But they in soliciting for that FISA court warrant.
And we'll get to that coming up following the top of the hour. My point on Adam Schiff is, though, Adam Schiff has claimed for the longest time that there is collusion there.
Mm-hmm.
And since we can't see it, he's able to claim that there's collusion. And I have a feeling the Democrats will do the same thing here, claim that there is evidence you know, in this because the Republicans won't release it. So if they won't release it, and they know the Republicans won't release it because Republicans, you know, in the Senate want to keep this rule in effect that, hey, we can't be blabbing out every background check we do of every judge. We're not going to do that. And so I believe they'll use it to their advantage and may force the Republicans to release it here in the next couple of days. I believe that will be one of the tactics that we will see tomorrow. I wish that you and I could finish the show here in the next 20 minutes and we could just repeat the first 2 hours, the rest of the show, go home, get some sleep, and then wake up at 7 a.m. so we can be up all day tomorrow because I really don't want to miss any of what's going to be going on. But I really think that you may see that. Let's head right to you. We go to Marcus in Virginia. Marcus, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
How you doing? Hey, I just what you were saying, Adam Schiff should be investigated. I think he's been leaking the whole time.
He may have. Know?
Yeah, I know he has. I mean, well, I don't know he has, but we all believe he has. I mean, I grew up in a whole family of Democrats my whole life. And even my father, lifelong Democrat, my sister, my brother-in-law, everybody, they're like totally disgusted with what has happened with the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to last. I mean, they have overplayed their hand.
Well,
they've went off the rails.
They did, but keep in mind, Marcus, and thank you for the call. We appreciate
there's
it.
There's a big I got two kids in college, and they think socialism's the greatest thing in the world.
Well, sure, and that's what's going to keep the insanity alive. That's why it's not really there. I don't see them coming back from where they are, because this is now the mainstream. The mainstream has to follow. Look, it doesn't matter who the protester is or what the cause is. The party, the protesters, the far left now leads the party. They lead the media. They're very active in the media. They're part of the media. You know, that's what, you know, they were saying former CNN officials or management, including Ted Turner, saying they've become CNN's become too political. And Jeff Greenfield coming out saying, he used to run CNN, coming out saying, you know, it's the people at CNN believe they're part of the anti-Trump resistance. They're activists, as we've known for a while. But this is not going to change. It's not going to end. They're not going to. They may have overplayed their hand here, but what they'll tell you is we didn't do enough. What they'll tell you is we didn't ramp it up enough. And even if he's confirmed this weekend and we move on from this, they'll believe that they're empowered because they at least got the delay. They got the supplemental background check done and all of that. They put the pressure on Trump and they were able to manipulate Trump and the Republicans, although it's Jeff Flake. And that's going to be
well,
their
but on the other side, they're going to know. That they're in trouble because at the Supreme Court at this point, then you have a 5-4, maybe not on everything that would be viewed as originalist or constructionist or, as they call it, conservative, which would I think is a mislabeling of it. But they will, you know, they know that if Trump is reelected in 2020, that's why I think they're going to up the insanity. Whether they win or lose any seats or whether they take over the House or whatever, it's going to be pure insanity from now till 2020 because they know that between now and 2020, if there's a Supreme Court seat that opens, we've seen how insane it's been now where they're promoting the fact that there is no presumption of innocence.
Right.
This is where they are right now. Mm-hmm. So how far will they go? Who knows? But they don't. I don't think they can imagine Trump being president till 2024 because then there's a possibility of two more Supreme Court seats that would come up. So will they moderate their message in order to maybe be able to win? Or will they just up the insanity for the next 2 years?
Yeah, the Trojan horse tactic. Oh, we'll just move to the middle a little bit in order to gain power.
Right.
Which is what they used to do.
That's what I should have said. Yeah. Or will they pretend to move to the middle?
Right. Exactly.
All right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right, coming up on the top of the hour, we'll talk more about the fact that the, I want to make sure we don't say investigation, the Kavanaugh background check is out. The White House has looked at it, and their report is no cooperation for any of the sexual assault allegations. And they said for the sexual assault allegations, which means Ramirez.
Right.
Because we know that the FBI contacted Ramirez, so it means both of them, and now it's in the hands of the Senate over the next couple of days. They will get to look at it. A cloture vote has been set for the vote for Brett Kavanaugh on Friday, which means you could have a overall vote for his confirmation on Saturday. Also coming up following the top of the hour, we'll get to your calls and comments on that if you want to get aboard, 866-90-RED-EYE. Plus, the latest on the Russian collusion bombshell that was out yesterday, where a top FBI official confirmed that he met with the Democratic Party lawyers to talk about the allegations of Trump and Russia collusion weeks before the 2016 election. We'll have that complete story for you. And before the Bureau, just before the Bureau secured a search warrant targeting Trump's campaign, they talked to Hillary and the DNC's lawyers. We'll get to that and more all coming up, plus your calls and comments. Line open if you want to get aboard, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. We'll get your calls and comments on Judge Kavanaugh and the fact that the background check has been completed. The White House has seen it, and the White House has, through sources, has told a number of different medias, including Fox and CNN reporting it, and Wall Street Journal reporting it, where I first saw it, there was no corroboration in any of the sexual assault allegations. And the headline I saw said allegations, which means they must be talking about Ramirez too, because we know the FBI did contact Ms. Ramirez. So there's where we are right now. We'll get back to that here in just a couple of moments. But this is just huge news, and it started coming out, you know, yesterday afternoon that there's a bombshell coming out that a top FBI person or there's a bombshell coming out which shows that politics played a huge role in the FISA warrant.
Right.
The Hill is the first one where I've seen with this story. John Solomon, well-known, he, along with Sarah Carter, if memory is correct here, are the ones that broke that story for Circa.com back in May of 2017 that the FISA court had rebuked the Obama administration for violating the rights of American citizens. after they broke that story, it really didn't go anywhere. We've always wondered, okay, where did that go? Did Congress do any type of oversight over that? So much is top secret when it comes to the FISA court that that story came out, and then not much happened afterwards. But that's where I really first, you know, got to know John Solomon and some of his work. He's been around. You see him now on different, you know, panelists and on different shows out there. But he works for TheHill.com. This from The Hill: congressional investigators have confirmed that a top FBI official met with Democratic Party lawyers to talk about Donald Trump and the Russian collusion weeks before the 2016 election and before the Bureau secured a search warrant targeting Trump's campaign. Former FBI General Counsel James Baker met during the 2016 season with at least one attorney for Perkins Coie, the Democratic National Committee's private law firm. That is the law firm used by the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and Hillary Clinton's campaign to secretly pay research firm Fusion GPS, who is a research firm who then hired Christopher Steele, the former British spy, to compile the dossier alleging Trump and Moscow were colluding to hijack the presidential election. The dossier was then used by the FBI, mostly unverified, as the main evidence to seek a secret warrant called a FISA warrant targeting the Trump campaign in the final days of the campaign. The revelation was confirmed both in testimony and other evidence secured by a joint investigation by Republicans on the House Judiciary and Government Oversight Committees, John Solomon's sources tells him, according to the article. It means that the FBI had good reason to suspect the dossier was connected to the DNC's main law firm and was the product of a Democratic opposition research effort to defeat Trump, yet failed to disclose that information to the FISA court in October of 2016 when the Bureau applied for a FISA warrant to surveil the Trump campaign advisor, Carter Page. A knowledgeable source told John Solomon this is a bombshell that unequivocally shows the real collusion was between the FBI and Donald Trump's opposition, the DNC, Hillary, and a Trump-hating British intelligence officer to hijack the election rather than some conspiracy between Putin and Trump, he says a knowledgeable source told him. Well, I get from that 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 would be a knowledgeable source close to the Trump campaign, because hijack the election is the term that his source used with him. But this is huge because this is the first, this would be the first direct testimony with evidence to support it, other evidence besides the testimony, according to this article, that the former FBI general counsel, that someone extremely high up in the FBI met just weeks before the 2016 election. And if it was just weeks, it would be just weeks before, even closer to right before the Bureau secured a search warrant targeting Trump's campaign. It would mean the FBI met with the Democratic National Committee's lawyer and Hillary's, it was the Democratic National Committee's private law firm. Okay, right. So you had that at the minimum. Mm-hmm. But Hillary also, her campaign paid money to Perkins Coie also, right, which also went down the line. Mm-hmm. So, but we know without question the Democratic National Committee's private law firm and the FBI met with at least one attorney from Perkins Coie to discuss the Donald Trump-Russia collusion. There's no reason for a top FBI official to be talking to anybody from any law firm that represents the DNC about Trump-Russia collusion. That's completely against any protocol of an investigation. Would it not be?
I would think so.
So that's huge news. And by the way,
and if that is the case, if this is an FBI attorney, if this is FBI counsel, then is that information not owned essentially by the public?
Now, The Hill and John Solomon was the first one that actually went into the specifics of it. The Fox News story, former top FBI lawyer James Baker gave explosive closed-door testimony on Wednesday detailing the congressional investigators how the Russia probe was handled in an abnormal fashion reflecting political bias, which would fit exactly with what John Solomon's column said, according to the Republican lawmakers present for the deposition. Some of the things that were shared were explosive in nature. Representative Mark Meadows told Fox News, the witness confirmed that things were done in an abnormal fashion that's extremely troubling. Meadows claimed that the abnormal handling of the probe into alleged coordination between Russian officials and the Trump presidential campaign was a reflection of the inherent bias that seems to be evident in certain circles. The FBI agent who opened the Russia case, Peter Strzok, FBI lawyer Lisa Page, and others sent politically charged texts and have since left the bureau. Baker, who had a close working relationship with former FBI Director James Comey, left the bureau earlier this year. The lawmakers would not provide many specifics about the private transcribed interview, citing a confidentiality agreement with Baker and his attorneys. However, they indicated in broad terms that Baker was cooperative and forthcoming about the genesis of the Russia case in 2016 and about the surveillance warrant application for the Trump campaign aide Carter Page in 2016 during the time that the FBI was putting the DOJ and FBI were putting together the FISA surveillance warrant during the time prior to the election. There was another source giving information directly to the FBI, which we found that source to be pretty explosive, said Representative Jim Jordan. So that's really interesting, too. But as I said, that's the Fox story. The Hill story is that Baker met with Perkins Coie with at least one attorney just weeks before the 2016 election and just before the Bureau secured the warrant targeting Trump's campaign, met with the DNC's private law firm. Wow.
Well, and what do we have? We also know that the spouse of a top official who was associate deputy attorney general at that time, in the Justice Department, a ranking official in the Justice Department. His wife worked at Perkins Coie. I'm sorry, worked at Fusion GPS. So you have here this loop being closed further by this story. Now that the FBI counsel meeting with Perkins Coie.
Further down in the story from the Hill, from his allegation of what his sources told him, mm-hmm. He then writes, Baker was interviewed by lawmakers behind closed doors on Wednesday. Sources declined to divulge his testimony, other than to say it confirmed other evidence about the contact between Perkins Coie and the FBI. The sources also said Baker's interview broke new ground, both about the FBI's use of the news media in 2016 mm-hmm. and 2017 mm-hmm. to further the Trump case and about Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's conversation in spring of 2017 regarding possible use of a body wire to record Trump. The interview was one of the most productive we had, and it opened up many new investigative leads, one source said. Another said Baker could not answer some questions about the FBI media contacts, citing an ongoing investigation by the Department of Justice Inspector General into alleged illegal leaks during and after the election about the Trump collusion probe and other matters. These revelations illustrate anew how much the FBI and Justice Department have withheld from the public about their collaboration and collusion with clearly partisan elements of the Clinton campaign and the DNC, Fusion and Steel, that they were trying to defeat Trump. The growing body of evidence that the FBI used mostly politically motivated, unverified intelligence from an opponent to justify spying on the GOP's nominate campaign just weeks before an election has prompted a growing number of Republicans to ask President Trump to declassify the rest of the FBI's main documents in the Russian collusion case. As we know now, they were declassified, but the president's sent those to the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, which when we saw that, we went, well, we know that they said that there were foreign allies, and we heard that the sources the news publications we have seen have said that it was Great Britain that they didn't want the information to be released, the unredacted
right.
information. I don't know how they would know what was in it to begin with. Why would they object to it? How would they know it was in it?
Right.
To begin with,
you could only have an objection if you know something damaging is in it.
And so Trump said he was going to send it to the inspector general, which made us question, wait a minute, the inspector general's office doesn't look to see whether something should be released or unredacted or whether it has too high of a security clearance. They only look for corruption in the Department of Justice.
Right.
So the only reason that we could think that that Trump and the administration said, okay, we're not going to release this yet, we're going to give it to the inspector general, is because whatever unredacted information is in there, they must believe that the inspector general can find corruption in the Department of Justice concerning the procedure over the FISA warrant.
Yeah, that's...
If you're listening for the first time, I know this is all calculus. I think most people that have been listening for a while to the show understand where we're going.
Well, it ultimately, when you look at that, especially with the IG being given all this unredacted information from the White House, you know that there's only one reason the Inspector General exists. That's to look and see if there's any kind of corruption or misdeeds
stealing
within the Department of Justice.
Accounting irregularities, things like that.
Taking pencils home, things like that.
And just so you know, if you're new to the show, what we've always talked about is the Democrats have said Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election.
Mm-hmm.
That was the initial charge. Well, what we all find out, and we all know now, nobody's debating it, is it was the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary campaign that paid a law firm, Perkins Coie, who then paid a opposition research firm, Fusion GPS, who paid a former British spy who got dirt, he says, from people close, you know, Russians close to the Kremlin, unverified, that they then took to use against Donald Trump to defeat his campaign. And when that didn't work, tried to destroy the legitimacy of the election and use that unverified information that they got from the Russians to get themselves a FISA warrant, a secret warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And what we're being told now is that somebody from the FBI met with the law firm who helped initiate the whole thing, along with the DNC and the Hillary campaign, right before the FISA warrant was issued and just weeks before the campaign.
Yeah.
So hopefully I think that explains it all as simply as you can explain it.
And a number of details coming about, you know, with the Solomon report that broke on Wednesday evening. And then, of course, you go back to the fact that Bruce Orr, at the time, a high-ranking official at the Department of Justice, his wife worked for Fusion GPS. So there are connections all over the place to this and a pattern of behavior and activity that right now points in one direction. And that's political motivation. Plain and simple, the question is, what, if any, crimes were committed along the way?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just want to make one more comment, and we'll get to more of your calls and comments. A lot of people wanting to talk about the what's going on with Kavanaugh and the fact that the background check is done, and the White House has already commented on it and says there's no corroboration of any of the sexual assault allegations. It's interesting because we get back here to the story from thehill.com about former FBI counsel Jim Baker testifying yesterday to Congress and all the information else that they got from it. This is the first time that you have had somebody from the last, you know, last administration, somebody high up in the FBI who has actually connected a dot themselves. It's not evidence. It's not email. You know, it's not evidence of an email or a text or anything like that. This is somebody testifying along with other evidence that right before the election, a top member, the general counsel of the FBI, met with the law firm of the DNC, who initiated the entire monetary transaction to get dirt from the Russians in order to destroy the Trump campaign and then destroy the legitimacy of the election. You've got somebody now from the FBI that has connected that dot that shows that politics played a huge role, you know, in the entire investigation. And where it goes from here, I don't know. Where it goes with the inspector general getting the FISA, you know, the unredacted FISA application, we will find out.
For VDO Road Log, here's your forecast.
As we predicted, those showers for today in the desert southwest have trekked northward. We'll see most of the precip now beyond the state of Arizona and into the states of Nevada and Utah. Salt Lake City set to receive heavy showers today. Up and down I-15, up to I-84 near Twin Falls, we'll continue to see showers from that system known as Rosa. North of those showers, we'll pick up some snow and mixed precip for central Idaho over through central Wyoming. Boise, Idaho has a 70% chance of showers today, but for Bismarck, North Dakota, we're going to pick up a wintry mix and possibly some accumulation. Look for heavy showers on the Kansas-Missouri border today. Light showers extending up through Illinois, Indiana, and northern Ohio. Thunderstorms and the potential for severe weather from Cleveland to Buffalo on I-90. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Outrage. Eric Hurley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So the process is now, by the way, he's Eric, I'm Gary. So now the process is that all the senators will get to look at the actual background check report from the FBI. There is only a single copy that will be provided that they must look at in a room. They can look at it over the next couple of days before the cloture vote. If they take notes in the room, they cannot remove their notes with them. None of their aides are able to look at the actual document, and we'll see where that goes from there, whether they'll actually be the call to, you know, make public the report. As you had talked about earlier, Eric, from doing research, this was passed by this rule that it's supposed to be kept private was a rule that the Democrat majority Senate put into effect in 2009. Mm-hmm. This actually is a Democrat majority rule.
Right. Well, and by the way, the nature of that rule and the process by which that came about likely had something to do with exactly this type of scenario. So imagine that it got out that, you know, I mean, it could have been any of them, that someone claimed Sotomayor did this while in college, but it was just somebody claiming that. Knowing the potential of a story like that going wide without being backed up could do damage. That's the whole idea. You look at that and say, okay, but is there anything to it?
You mean like has happened?
Exactly. That's my whole point, is that it likely has to do with this very kind of scenario where, well, the police went to his house after they were called by a neighbor. Or the someone claimed that she did something, depending on who the nominee is. But there's nothing else to substantiate that, which is exactly what we have here, because you get that out into the media, and it's a story really that doesn't, it should not be binding, as everyone on the right now is saying about Kavanaugh. This shouldn't be binding if you can't back it up.
Oh, or, because remember, background check simply talks to people.
Right.
So somebody could say, well, yeah, I heard, a friend of mine told me that another friend told me that he hit a guy back when he was in college.
Right.
Well, that's double hearsay.
Yep.
And so does
and it would be in the report.
Right.
Because it was said during the process. But for a story to go on like that, it could have the media can take that and they can run with it, or any other politician on Capitol Hill could take that and try and use that to their advantage in order to undermine the integrity of the process, which is exactly where we are today.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens today. The cloture vote has been set for Friday, and a general vote could happen as early as Saturday. As I said, I wish that you and I could go home right now and just repeat the rest of the show so we could be up all day, because it would be interesting to see. It's not over.
No, procedurally,
it's not going to be over what the Democrats attempt to do to stall this.
Procedurally, basically, the petition to invoke foreclosure, that has happened. That happened Wednesday, late Wednesday, by Senate Majority Leader. They basically Thursday. Is just a kind of a blank day, although it will be about reviewing the documents. And Friday, they will move forward to move with a cloture vote. And cloture, for those that may not know, is basically just ending the debate and discussion on it and saying, okay, now it's ready for a vote. So that vote would happen, I'm assuming, if, and they'll know the head count there on the cloture vote will tell them, you know, what the head count is for the vote. And I doubt they're going to want to delay much longer after that cloture vote if they get 50 or more.
We go to Chris in Battle Creek, Michigan. Chris, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
What I'm curious about, and it's just something that went through my head, is what do you guys think about the idea that the whole reason they held everything and that they've been doing what they've been doing, and they laid the groundwork for it in the hearings by claiming that he was kind of partisan and attacking them, is that they didn't think they were actually going to be able to stop the confirmation of Kavanaugh. So what they've been doing is laying the groundwork to, once he's elected and is on the Supreme Court, from this point forward, they're going to claim he's partisan and try and demand that he recuse himself or abstain from any votes having to do with anything they want.
But they don't. He's the only person that can recuse himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they can't scream that.
They'll scream it all day long, but they'll get nowhere
they
with it.
They can't get anywhere with it.
Okay. Because I've heard lawyers, you know, try and say that judges should recuse themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Scream and holler.
Well, you know, when they lose the electoral vote, then we should do away with the electoral college. If they lose this, then, you know, we should do away with this process, and we should change the way that Supreme Court justices are seated, and we should, and it will be all about, well, we didn't get our way, so we should change the rules.
Right. And by the way, that call happens already in the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
I can't remember. There's been some cases where we've even said some of the judges should recuse themselves. I can't remember a specific one
right
off the top of my head, but I know that we've talked about that in the past. And I can't remember.
They were an appellate judge on a case.
Yes.
You know, and before they were seated on it got to the court after they were seated on the high court. That's happened, or they argued a case or something. Then, but again, that's up to them, because
For example, they're arguing a case that deals with the law, you know, with the company, and their wife works for the company, or their husband works for the company.
Yes.
At that point, you have to recuse yourself. But to say, as we've heard, for example, well, they can't he can't rule on anything that involves the Democrats because he's been partisan and he got angry at them. That's not going to hold any water.
Yeah. You remember when the talk about, you know, his nomination, this is back during the Gorsuch nomination process. The talk was, well, the president should nominate his sister, you know, and it was like, okay, that's she would have to recuse herself from every case. Because, well, that company is indirectly working with my brother's company, and that, and you know, you get the whole thing. And of course, you know, the fact that, well, she's part of his family. But the process, and you and I were having this discussion during the break, there's a great deal of respect by everyone that's seated on the court right now for the process. Not that they make decisions that we always agree with. In fact, well, I can think of three that often make decisions we highly disagree with. Or four sometimes with John Roberts, but we can talk about that. But the procedure on procedural issues, all of the justices that are seated right now on the high court have a great deal of respect for those procedures and how you move forward with a case. It is not driven like the social media world of today at the Supreme Court in terms of procedure. Now, the hearings often have these interesting comments that come out of them and questions that come out of them, and then the media takes them and runs with them, often out of context. They did that with Scalia. But still, in terms of the procedure, there's a great deal of respect by each of those that are seated right now.
But I think you make a great point by saying the world of the Supreme Court, or even the federal judges to begin with, is not the social media world. I'm glad you made that comparison, that it's not the social media world that we live in. For example, most people don't know that former Justice Scalia and Ruth Bader Ginsburg were great friends.
Someone needs to make that movie.
Their families used to vacation together.
Yes.
That's how tight they were. You could not find two polar opposites. So what you end up getting is there is, when you get up that high in a very, very unique job, there is, even if we can sit here and we have and said we don't believe that this person respects the Constitution, that there is a camaraderie that exists for the process.
Yes.
And if you were to ask the judges privately what they believe about the process that Kavanaugh is going through right now, I bet you the majority of judges would say it's absolutely horrendous and should not be that way.
Because it opens the door. This is my point earlier about what I believe and how the rule came about by the Senate in 2009, controlled by the Democrats, that keeps this process of the background check secret, and the content of the 302 secret is likely because of exactly what we're seeing right now. And that is, if some content came out, just imagine that we never heard Dr. Ford's name, but the claim came out, what they would do is look at that and go, okay, was there anybody backing it up? Because the claim would be in the 302, except if they found that they couldn't find anyone with firsthand knowledge of the event or the claims, then they would say, we couldn't find anything to corroborate. Well, they know, the Senate knew back then, that you take something like that, a simple claim that cannot be backed up, and it could derail the entire process, and that's exactly what we're looking at.
But here's a point that nobody's talked about. With all the federal judgeships out there, forget about the Supreme Court, just the federal judgeships out there, that background checks are done. How many thousands of claims that are uncorroborated? When you think about the federal judiciary out there and the process that they have to go through and the background checks that are done, how many thousands or tens of thousands of allegations are made that are uncorroborated in order to defeat somebody and never get known to the public?
Right.
And the only reason this one did was because Dianne Feinstein said, okay, this is going to be the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
We would normally never do this. This is against complete protocol. What I'm doing, complete rules of the Senate, complete protocol. We don't do this, but I'm doing this because the end justifies the means. In this case, we cannot allow a 5-4 majority that is a more constructionist, originalist court.
And in learning of this rule, now it puts it all into perspective. She knew that if she turned, Feinstein, if she turned this information over to the FBI to vet as a part of the official process,
it would have
been in the official 302 report, and you wouldn't hear about it.
When you think about that, that's the whole point. Nobody would have ever known that this existed.
Right.
Her name would have never come out because everything would have been corroborated. And then at that point, it dies, just like probably the thousands of other allegations,
yes,
that have come out against other federal judges and Supreme Court justices over the decades.
And that's it, because you could start easily a smear campaign simply with a claim. Now it makes sense as to why Feinstein, for her politically, and why it worked to her end, and for her side, at least up to this point, why it was more important to leak it to the media, and certainly you could not take it to the FBI, because if that were in the report of the 302, we wouldn't hear about it.
Now you know why Lindsey Graham was so enraged.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Kevin in York, Pennsylvania. Kevin, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, fellas. You know, I'm going to say this real quick, then I'm going to listen.
Okay.
I find it very weird that a lot of these Democrats, and this report isn't even that long, they're complaining because they have to read it one by one, that they're not going to have enough time to thoroughly go through it, when they signed and passed 2,100 plus bills without reading them. I don't get that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, you're going back to Obamacare.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We need to pass it so we can see what's in it. I mean, that's
exactly.
Still one of the most
exactly.
Probably
yeah.
one of the most classic pieces
lines
of political rhetoric,
right? Yeah.
Ever when she said that, because it was like, you understand what you just said there? Well, that's okay, because the people that vote for me are idiots anyway, so they'll accept
the stupid American voter.
Yeah, they'll accept anything that I say. Look, they're going to try to use any excuse. And I wish we could just end the show and just repeat the first 3 hours for the last 2 hours, so I can go home, go to sleep, and be up by 7 o'clock, because I just want to be awake all day tomorrow, just to see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know. I mean, I. The strat-
well, I mean, could I get, you have predicted what happened Friday with Jeff Flake in the elevator?
No. So to sit here and, you know, we've said a couple of scenarios we think possibly could happen already on the show, but because we think one way and they think completely in a different way, I have no idea what direction they will do, but they've got some kind of strategy try to delay it another week.
Friday, by the way, they take roll call. That's one of the first things they do after they've been there for an hour. And 51 members of the Senate must be present to move forward with cloture.
They don't show?
Is Jeff Flake going to flake again?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.